Ladies and gentlemen, welcome and thank you for joining today's Market Surveillance Committee teleconference. Please note that all lines will be muted until the Q&A portions of the call. If you would like to enter the question queue, you can press pound two on your telephone keypad. You will hear a notification when your line is unmuted. At that time, please then state your name and question. I will now turn the call over to Benjamin Hobbs, Chair of the Market Surveillance Committee meeting. Please go ahead.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm Ben Hobbs, and I'm on this call with Scott Harvey and Jim Bushnell, all of us members of the Market Surveillance Committee. Welcome you to the meeting in which we're going to be considering adoption of the draft opinion that we uploaded earlier this week on intertie deviation settlements. On the agenda, as usual, we'll have an opportunity for public comments on any issue, although if you have comments on the opinion itself, I'll ask that you hold those comments until the second item in the agenda, where we will summarize the opinion, and Scott Harvey will take the lead on that. We'll then have discussion by members of the MSC, followed by open discussion by stakeholders, others who are on the call. And then finally, we have future agenda items as the third agenda item. With me on the call, besides the other MSC members, are several ISO staff, including Megan Pogue, Daniel Table, Brad Cooper, Greg Cook, and Shami Davis, and David Zavatlo. Is there anybody else in the ISO who's joined us?
No, that's it from the ISO.
Okay, sounds like we've covered it. Okay, so first I'd like to ask if there's any public comment on any issue other than the intertie deviation settlements. Operator, can you open up the lines and see if anybody's queued up?
Yes, so once again, you can press pound 2 on your telephone keypad if you have a question at this time. And it does not look like we're receiving any questions.
Okay. Look forward to discussion later from those on the phone on the opinion itself. So I will quickly introduce the opinion and then pass the mic over to Scott, who will summarize in some more detail, and then Jim, Scott, and myself might add some additional comments. So as an introduction, as renewable penetration increases, we need to manage their variability by drawing on resources across a wider footprint in order to manage them efficiently and keep the system reliable. This is, of course, a strong motivation for the creation of the EIM in the real-time market and for the day-ahead market enhancements that the ISO is now considering, and other ways of lowering barriers to transactions among balancing authorities, day-ahead and intraday. A major barrier, of course, is the different timings that different balancing areas have for transactions. In particular, some intertie transactions between the ISO and other BAs are only offered available on an hourly basis, but the ISO does not have a financially binding hour-ahead market. But if it wants that power, it does have to schedule it hour-ahead. So the way this works now, as explained in the opinion, is that an hour-ahead transaction settles at a price determined in a later market, the 15-minute market. If it turns out that an hour-ahead transaction is not tagged and delivered to the 15-minute market, under the present rules, usually the parties involved in the transaction will not face an imbalance settlement. This system winds up creating an obligation on the ISO's part. If it's accepted, a HASP schedule, if the half schedule is delivered, the ISO has to take it at the FMM price. But on the other side, the party, the scheduling party, now has an option, in fact, that they can choose not to deliver, and they face a modest or no penalty at all, de facto. So, for example, it can choose not to deliver if there arises another better opportunity, or if it looks like they predict that the 15-minute prices might be lower than anticipated. So in this opinion, we discuss actually a dirty dozen reasons why this might happen, but we also come to no conclusions about which one predominates, because there's not as much data as would be needed to draw hard and fast conclusions about why we're seeing schedules, hour-ahead schedules or day-ahead schedules not being delivered. But whatever the reasons for them not being delivered, this creates both economic problems and potentially reliability problems. And so the task here is, if one keeps an hour-ahead scheduling mechanism that is not financially binding and defers the determination of the prices until later, you've got a situation where you have to give folks an out if it turns out that it's really impossible to bring the power in for reasons out of the supplier's control. You don't want to punish those, because then you might be discouraging imports that, of course, California heavily relies upon. But on the other hand, a weak and ineffective mechanism for penalizing non-delivery when non-delivery is within the control of the supplier leads to the problems that the ISO is concerned with now. So the ISO is proposing some changes to the present penalties for non-delivery and how those are calculated and their magnitude. And in this opinion, which Scott will summarize in detail in just a moment, we summarize the present charges that are applied to non-delivery, these dozen potential causes of problems, non-delivery problems, and the difficulties that we have in trying to pin down which are the most important problems. We also summarize the ISO proposal and experiences other ISOs have had with non-delivery and how they dealt with it, notably the New York ISO's experience. And finally, we conclude with our assessment of the likely effectiveness of the measures. And at this moment, because we cannot pin down the reasons for non-delivery, we can't say with confidence that the proposed changes will eliminate all or even a majority of the problem, but it's still something that we guardedly support as at least being in the right direction. So at this point, I'd like to hand over the mic to Scott, who will summarize the opinion in some more detail. And then we'll have MSC discussion and open it up to stakeholders. Scott?
Yes, this is Scott. I'm not going to go through and summarize all the elements of the opinion. I thought I'd talk about a few elements of it that were significant. First, as been indicated, we support the imposition of these penalties because effective penalties of this type are needed to provide California ISO operators with reasonable assurance that transactions that are scheduled in HASP will be delivered. And as the CAISO has discussed in their various straw proposals and with the market participants, the current decline charge is inherently ineffective in providing this kind of assurance, in large part because the threshold for imposing penalties is much too high. No penalties until 10% of the transactions scheduled within the month are not delivered. There are a couple of other elements of the CAISO market design which perhaps not explicitly intended to deal with non-delivery of interchange are intended to incent performance and therefore can tend to incent market participants to deliver interchange, and these are the adjustment charge and deviation settlements. But as we discuss in the memo and looking at these, they appear to be largely likely ineffective in considerable part because some of the price formation issues in the CAISO, so that the prices that would settle the deviations and perhaps incent performance are so low they serve very little effect in incenting performance. We also note, as Ben noted, that these kind of penalties for non-performance and non-delivery interchange transactions are not unique. They're a characteristic that other ISOs that use economic evaluations of interchange transactions, which is not all, only some ISOs do economic evaluations like the CAISO, but those that do want to have imposed penalties to assure that when they carry out this economic evaluation, the power is delivered. The second element has been talked about, and you will see in the opinion, we discussed a number of possible reasons for the level of non-delivery that the CAISO has encountered, in part so that we could try to assess whether the changes that the CAISO is proposing are likely to be effective or how effective in addressing those concerns. And one thing in working with the CAISO and evaluating and digging into the data over the holidays, we found that a lot of the non-delivery appears to be associated with deficiencies in California ISO price formation, and that the non-delivery is associated with circumstances where the observed hash price is high, making it economic to deliver high-cost power, and then the FMM and RTD prices are very low, making it uneconomic to deliver the power at the price at which it's actually set, and also undermining penalties such as the adjustment charge and the deviation settlement. This also has implications for the CAISO's proposal, because if FMM prices and RTD prices are very low in circumstances in which they're non-deliveries, the CAISO's, the new penalties are also not going to be that effective in incenting performance. If the penalty is very small relative to a loss of several hundred dollars, market participants are going to continue to not deliver power. So one risk with this design and concern is that, in fact, it's not going to be very effective because a lot of the non-deliveries are occurring where price formation is working poorly and prices are low, and CAISO operators are going to still find themselves uncertain about what's going to happen. But conversely, there is a possibility that these penalties will be high enough to be effective in reducing non-deliveries, but there's also a risk that if the underlying price formation issues are not addressed, then the inability of market participants that are selling power into the CAISO to use tagging decisions to avoid large losses due to low prices may cause them simply to not offer power at all, not only to not deliver power at some times when FM prices are low, but to simply not offer the power at all, which is not a desirable outcome from the standpoint of the CAISO. So that's one of the concerns that made us feel that it's important that the CAISO address these price formation issues as they move forward with these penalties. A third element that we found in looking empirically at the non-deliveries was that there appeared to be an association between high levels of non-deliveries and the level of out-of-market purchases by the California ISO operators. While we didn't go and dig into this at the level of the scheduling coordinator, we did observe, you know, a fair relationship between the ties and amounts on which the HAS transactions were not delivered and then out-of-market purchases were made by the CAISO, suggesting that perhaps the out-of-market purchases are creating the non-deliveries by shifting HAS transactions into the exceptional dispatch supply. When that happens, sometimes there's that diminishes the impact of the non-delivery on the market and is one of the reasons we don't observe high prices at times when the non-deliveries occur. At other times, it looks like the out-of-market purchases are actually somewhat larger or significantly larger than the HAS transactions that don't flow, with the outcome that the real-time, the FMM prices are very, very low because of the increased supply. This leads us to the further observation that the mere knowledge that the CAISO is entering into auto market purchases when they start talking to other suppliers may incent the non-delivery of HASS transactions, because the buyers then know that, okay, that the HASS price closed at 300, but the CAISO is going to buy a bunch of is in the process of buying a bunch of extra power that will depress the FMM and RTD prices. So if everybody delivers what was scheduled in HASS, the price is going to be crushed. So the mere knowledge that the CAISO is entering into these out-of-market purchases may lead to market participants being concerned about delivering the supply. So this raises another level of uncertainty about how effective these changes may be if there aren't other changes in CAISO processes, because if the out-of-market purchases continue to occur, and they're basically shifting HASS transactions into out-of-market transactions, all the penalties may do is slightly raise the price at which people sell power out-of-market to the The price formation also enters into the relationship between FMM and RTD prices that may be impacted by the operator use of load conformance in HASP and FNM to compensate for the current ineffectiveness of the FlexiRamp product and the FlexiRamp constraint design. And one effect of the operators making these large load conformance adjustments in HASP and FMM during the ramping hours is that basically by buying additional imports in FMM and then allowing California internal CAISO generation to be dispatched down in RTD, this provides additional capacity for upward ramp during those hours. So while this ramp should be provided by the FlexiRamp product and constraint designs, we know from other discussions we've had in the last year and a half that that isn't happening because of the broadening of the region from which is procured to the CAISO to the entire Western EIM without really checking deliverability. So this may be causing the operators to use load conformance adjustments to procure additional ramp. And this is a expensive way to procure ramp, and it has a weakness in terms of the not necessarily creating additional ramp, but it may be contributing to these overall problems of the large out-of-market purchases, the price formation issues that we observed. So there's a complicated set of factors we found, but in the end, it's still fundamental that the CAISO needs to have assurance that the transactions that are scheduled in the HASP are going to flow, so that this change is part of the necessary elements and the necessary changes CAISO needs to make. But as we indicate in the opinion, we're concerned that there are other issues that may need to be addressed in combination to enable the CAISO to achieve its goals. So that's my summary of the key elements of the opinion.
Thank you very much, Scott. Let me check. Jim, do you have any comments that you would like to add?
Well, you guys summarized everything pretty well. I guess I'll just reinforce that some of these price formation, exceptional dispatch issues that were relevant to this particular non-delivery topic are worth following up on, even independent of their impact on non-delivery, and hope that will happen.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay, thank you, Jim. Thank you, Scott. At this point, I'd like to open up the lines for any comments from folks who have called in. Operator, can you invite folks to raise their hand and offer a comment or a question?
Sure.
And these comments and questions can be directed to either MSC members and or to staff.
All right. So again, if you do have a question or comment, you can press #2 on your telephone keypad to enter the question queue. And it looks like we have one person entering the queue now. Caller, your line is unmuted.
Hi, Jim, Ben, and Scott. It's Brian Thaker with NRG. Thank you for holding this call to talk through the opinion. As you can probably surmise from my company's situation in the market, I'm really mostly interested in the observations that are sprinkled throughout the opinion about the price formation. The opinion strongly suggests that this ought to be something that's investigated by the ISO, and so I guess the question I have, I'll welcome you to answer it if you will, but I'd also like staff to react, is what does the CAISO plan to do with regard to the price formation issues that the MSC raised in the opinion?
Yeah, so as Scott and Jim have both indicated, these are big issues that are and should be considered. Whether or not this particular intertie deviation settlement initiative being undertaken. But Scott or Jim, do you have any additional response to Brian? And then we'll turn over to staff.
I don't have any further comment because I think Brian's question is really directed at the CAISO, not anything we can answer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Agreed.
Yeah, this is okay. Brad Cooper. Yeah, Ben, this is Brad Cooper. I can address it. Our at least preliminary assessment of the situation is that it's kind of a vicious cycle, so to speak, that the operators take various measures to increase reliability, you know, whether it's the load forecast adjustment or the out-of-market purchases or exceptional dispatch purchases, you know, anticipating declines or to protect against declines and other factors. And, then that results in some of the price formation issues, which then increases the amount of declines for the reasons you talked about, because then, you know, the FMM price can be lower than the HASS price. And then, you know, that results likely in the operators then feeling they even need to take more actions. So our view is that this penalty needs to go in place hand in hand with changes in ISO processes to improve the prices. You know, as Scott pointed out, otherwise it could likely not be effective and not do any good. And I think we agree with Brian that, you know, it's important to have, good price formation that's actually reflecting conditions. So we're going to, we're still putting together our plans, but we plan to analyze the relationship between the conformances and the exceptional dispatches some more, and then have look at what changes in the ISO processes we can do and have in place at the same time that we're implementing this decline charge.
Yeah, thanks, Brad. I'll just react to
Brad.
I'm sorry, this is Brian. Somebody else was trying to speak. Do they want to go ahead?
Go ahead, Brian.
Okay, thanks, Ben. Yeah, Brad, I agree completely. And we have a tangible proposal for what to do about the intertie, deviations, but we don't have much more to go on, anything tangible with regard to addressing the price formation issues. So agreeing with you that this ought to be implemented hand in hand, I'd sure like to see the ISO come up with something very quickly to address these price formation issues, because I agree with the MSC that if you address the deviation settlement but don't address the price formation issues, you've kind of built your house on some sand. Thanks.
Yeah, Brian, we appreciate that.
Thanks, Brian, for your question, and Brad for your reply. Operator, is there anybody else queued up?
Yes, we do have a couple more in the queue here. I'll go to the next caller. Your line is unmuted.
Hi, this is Carrie Bentley with the Western Power Trading Forum. I won't repeat what Brian said because that was pretty much our question. I guess it sounds like you guys are moving forward with this, which is great. Brad, I was wondering, would that be a separate initiative, or could you keep stakeholders updated on that process, perhaps at the Market Performance and Planning Forum? I think transparency and tracking this really important issue would be very helpful.
Brad?
Carrie, we haven't formulated any precise plans like that. I don't think it would be a separate policy initiative. It would be you know, first we would do an analysis and assessment of what we can do, and then, I imagine that we would update people at the MPPF or some other forum. But it wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't be a formal, you know, like policy development stakeholder initiative. I look at this as kind of, you know, operational improvements. But we'll figure out some way to keep people informed. It would likely be the MPPF.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Thanks, Gary. Thanks, Brad. Okay, operator, anybody else queued up?
Yes, we'll go ahead and move to the next question. Caller, your line is unmuted.
Hi, folks. It's Mark Smith with Calpine. I'm just adding to the chorus here. Certainly, we support the changes to the deviation charges as being a necessary step, but probably not a sufficient step. My specific question, Scott, I know that you have been focused for quite some time on real-time uplift charges. In your analysis, did you see in addition to low FMM and RTD prices compared to house prices, did you see or was part of the scope of what you did to look at the magnitude of the bid cost recovery or uplift charges as well?
We did make some effort to see what we could track down in terms of the level of uplift and whether it was what it was during some of these price events that we looked at, but we weren't able to get sufficiently detailed data to draw any conclusions about that. So that would be something that'd be interesting to look at, but we haven't done the analysis, Mark.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate that. In addition to the conformance changes, that what I used to call load biasing, we also have the minimum online capacity commitment, the MOCs, that could be creating lots of capacity and maybe too much capacity during those real-time intervals. I don't know, but that's another issue that might be of interest to look into as a cause of some of the uplift. Thanks, folks. I appreciate the study, and as I said, we certainly support changes to the intertie deviation proposal that's out there.
Okay. Thank you, Mark, for your question. So just a quick question for staff then. Mark mentioned the minimum online constraints. What is the timing for implementing the contingency modeling enhancements, which were supposed to perhaps obviate or lessen the need for the MOC constraints?
Yeah, Ben, this is Brad. I believe it's we want to put that in at the same time as we move to the 15-minute day-ahead market, because a lot of the work would have to be redone if we put it in now. So that would be put in at the same time as the 15-minute granularity, which would be fall of 2020. So it's been put off a little bit, but that's just to save work efficiently.
Okay. Thanks, Brad. So, operator, do we have anybody else who'd like to make a question or comment?
Yes, it looks like we have one more in the queue at the moment. Caller, your line is unmuted.
Hi there. It's Mike Goodup at PowerX. Just wanted to jump on to some of the other comments made in support. We also support the steps Texas proposed to take with intertie deviations. And we think the MSC's opinion paper did a really good job of, you know, kind of exploring some of the other issues that should be, you know, further explored. I think, you know, the comment that was made that suggests, you know, the steps they're taking here are tangible steps, and it's great to see them taking them. It would be very nice to see more tangible steps taken to address the price formation issues that the MSC did such a good job of calling out on. So just wanted to support those comments made. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, too. So that basically seconds or thirds what Brian and Carrie were saying. Operator, anything else? Anybody else waiting?
It looks like that is the end of the question queue for the moment.
Okay. So if that concludes public questions and comments, I'd like to move to the part of the meeting where we consider adoption of the opinion. And there is an aversion of the opinion which corrects some very minor typos. And I would invite a motion to adopt that opinion.
Scott,
I
move to adopt it.
I second the motion.
Okay. So Dr. Harvey moves to adopt the opinion as modified to correct minor inconsequential typos, and Jim seconded it. Do we have any discussion?
No.
If there's no discussion, then I'll take a vote. Scott?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
And I vote yes, so the opinion on intertie deviation settlements has been adopted unanimously with the minor changes. And so at this point, we move to the last item on the agenda, which is on future agenda items. And first, I'll just point out that we're having an in-person meeting in Folsom a week from today. And there are three items on the that will be on the agenda, though this is always subject to modification. The first is reliability must run and capacity procurement mechanism enhancements. The second is local market power mitigation enhancements, such as the opportunity cost rules for hydropower. And third are day-ahead market enhancements with a focus on the flexible ramping product. And that means we're going to have definitely a full day, and look forward to seeing some of you in person and hearing from others of you over the phone lines. And at this point, I'll check to see anything else from the MSC that they'd like to raise at this time.
Scott Harvey has nothing to add. Thank you.
Yep, not from me.
Okay, so we're done. Thank you very much, those of you who called in. Thanks to the staff members who joined us, and thanks to the members of the MSC as well. And I look forward to seeing everybody next week in sunny California. What I understand you've had a lot of rain. Congratulations, but if you could have one day of sunshine next Friday, I'd appreciate it.
You got it.
Okay, operator, this concludes the call.
Thank you,
Marvin.
You're welcome. Thank you for using AT&T Event Conferencing Enhanced. You may now disconnect.